the gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. The gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love.
Welcome to Lesbian and Gay Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. I plan to cover a lot of territory in terms of years and types of music. Mostly, I just don't think gay and lesbian music of the past should be forgotten, and I try to give a little information about the music and artist as I go. I also slip in songs from the present as well. I introduce this segment with the song Gay Spirit by Charlie Murphy from the 1979 album Walls to Roses. It's one of my favorite gay anthems, and here's just a little more of it.
The gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. The gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a time of open love.
Today's show has some special treats, and I can't wait to get started with them. First up is an artist I got to hear at the Houston Pride Festival in June, and I think she stole the show. She owned that audience. Here's Suede singing Built for Comfort.
Get it, babe.
Some folks are built like this, some folks are built like that. The way I'm built. Now don't you call me fat, because I'm built for comfort. Ain't built for speed. And I got everything that a good woman needs. Some folks zip and run, some folks heave and sigh. You want some of this? You gotta take your time, because I'm built for comfort. Ain't built for speed. And I got everything that a good woman needs. Look out.
That song is from Suede's new CD called On the Day We Met. I interviewed her at the festival and asked her to describe her music.
I always have a hard time trying to figure out how to categorize my music. I think, especially recently, it falls most easily into sort of a pop jazz style of music, like a jazz standards with a pop feel. It's listenable jazz, blues influence. Does that give you an idea? It's not folk. It's not country.
Suede's first album was called Easily Suede, and it came out in 1988. She picked a song from that album when I asked her of what song that she's recorded is she the most proud.
Oh, my. How could I possibly choose between my babies? Most proud. I really don't know how I would answer that. There are tunes like the song For the Ones Who Aren't Here that was written by John Calvey that's on my first CD that I'm just really proud to have put out there into the world. John wrote it about folks who don't feel safe enough to be out in their lives and the importance of remembering that they're also there and that we that are fortunate enough to be able to be out in our lives have to continue creating safe spaces for those people and remember them. I also thought that it was very appropriate to play for people with AIDS when the AIDS pandemic hit our community so hard. I've also performed it for events that are for survivors of breast cancer. So I think the listener, that's a perfect example of a song where the listener can put their own meaning to it.
I'm thinking about the ones who aren't here and won't be coming in late. Home all alone with a family and won't be coming out tonight. Wish I could know all the lovers and friends kept from gathering. I think of you now, ways you could go. We're all of us refugees. Telling myself and the family, my friends and the folks
Was called For the Ones Who Aren't Here. Suede, which gay and lesbian artists do you admire?
Every single one of them. Every single one. Anybody who's done it, anybody who's come before, anybody who's out there just starting out now. It's a courageous move to step into the music industry, period. But to step into the music industry as an out performer is still extremely courageous. And the folks who inspired me at the beginning of my career, of course, were people like Margie Adam, Chris Williamson, Teresa Trull, Romanofsky and Phillips, Tom Amiano, The Flirtations. And I'm not saying that because I was in the group. I especially have respect for the folks who started out doing this long before it was even as safe as it is today to be an out performer. They built incredible bridges for us and tore down some pretty massive walls and created a space for all of us to be safe in now. And it's ironic because many of us have kind of a hard time getting crowds to come in the door now unless they already know us, because people can line up for days for Melissa Etheridge and the Indigo Girls and Katie Lang. But I'll tell you, I swear, those doors weren't opened by people like Chris Williamson and Romanofsky and Phillips and that group, then I wonder if KD and the Indigo Girls and Melissa would be safe enough to be out.
In 1996, she joined one of my favorite gay singing groups, The Flirtations. Suede, how did you end up in The Flirtations?
They asked me. I'd say no. No. Well, they had about a 10-show tour that they needed somebody to come in as a sub for one of their members who was involved in another group and had some other shows booked, and they asked me to come in and do those 10 shows as a sub, and it clicked. It worked really well. For a long, long time, Michael Callan and I had talked about, you know, you guys are so inclusive, you're so about going right across the board and getting everybody involved. It's time you guys have a woman in the group. And he said, I agree completely. So it took us a while to get there, but we finally did.
Do you have a favorite flirtation story?
Oh, my. There are a lot of flirtation stories, too. Well, we were on tour out west, and I very quickly became the driver for the group once I joined. And we decided it was a night of a new moon, so there was no moon in the sky, and we were out in the desert, and we decided to drive way out into the middle of the desert and see the stars and just feel the air. And so we did that, and it was incredible. And on the way back, we got a flat tire out in the middle of the desert, no lights. You know, we were like, we know there are coyotes waiting for a little midnight snack for us. So we get out of the car. First of all, I stop the car and I say, yep, we've got a flat. And John, who was sitting in the back, just went, oh, Suede, this isn't going to take long, is it? I said, no, honey, you sit there and look pretty. I'll take care of it. So we got out, and actually John did get out of the car and took the video camera. So we changed the tire in the middle of the desert to the little light on the video camera. But we did it, by golly.
From the Flirtations album called Three, here's the song that Suede tells me has become her signature song, Sister, Miss Sally's Blues.
Wahoo!
Zap-a-doot, swap-a-doot, zap-a-doot, swap-a-da-bow. Sister, you've been on my mind. Sister, we're two of a kind. So, sister, I'm keeping my eye on you.
to think I don't know nothing but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too. Scuffling. I've been up that lonesome road, and I've seen a lot of suns going down. Uh-huh, but trust me, no low life's gonna run me around. So let me tell you something, sister, remember your name. No twister gonna steal your stuff away, my sister. We sure ain't got a whole lot of time. Scuffling. I've been up that lonesome road, and I've seen a lot of sun going down. Uh-huh, but trust me, no low life's gonna run me around. So let me tell you something, sister. Remember your name. No twister gonna steal your stuff away, my sister. We sure ain't got a whole lot of time. So, oh, oh, shake your shimmy, sister. Cause honey, the show gives feeling fine.
Hello, this is Suede, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage on KPFT in Houston.
Also, be sure to listen to KPFT every Saturday night at midnight for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. And I want to mention that those of you on the internet can see photos of the artists and recordings and view my playlist on a special webpage that I've set up just for this show. It's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Up next is Alex Stopkin doing kind of a sing-along with the song If It Wasn't for the Women from her 1992 album Love and Politics.
If it wasn't for the women, women, we would not be living, living. We would not be joyful, singing, loving and beloved again. If it wasn't for the women, women, we would not be living, living. We would not be joyful, singing, loving and beloved. Keep going. If it wasn't for the women, what would we do? We wouldn't have health or strength or beauty. We wouldn't have a home. We wouldn't have food. If it wasn't for the work of the women, if it wasn't for the women, women, we would joyful, singing, loving and loving women.
The next part of the show will be about Margie Adam. When you talk about the women's music movement, you have to talk about the women known as the Big Four: Chris Williamson, Mae Christian, Holly Near, and Margie Adam. Their pioneering work with Olivia Records got it all started. The biggest album by far on that label was Chris Williamson's The Changer and the Changed from 1975. And in 1991, Olivia Records produced a video about that record and the early history of women's music, and it contains some rare music clips. From a 1975 concert, here's a little bit of the only recording I know of where all of the Big Four sing together on a song. The song is Mae Christian's Hello Hooray, which was the first song on the first album on the Olivia label, from Meg's album called I Know, You Know. Taking turns, each singing a line are, in order, Meg, Chris, Margie, and Holly.
Hello, hooray, let the show begin. I'm ready. Hello, hooray, let the lights grow dim. We've all been ready. Ready for the rain to fall, just to fall again. Ready for a woman to be born, only to be born again and again and again and again and again. I'm ready. Held over, let the lights grow dim. We've been ready. Ready for the rain to fall, just to fall again. Ready for a woman to be born, only to be born again.
From the same video, here's Margie talking about an early conversation with Chris Williamson.
We began to trade songs, and she played a song, and then I would play a song, and then she would play a song, and then I would play a song. There was a point where we both felt comfortable enough so that I said, well, now here's the song that I performed, but the audience doesn't seem to respond to it. I really love this song, but the audience doesn't seem to get it. Whenever I perform it, it's like they just kind of sit on their hands. There's this kind of a smattering of applause, but I don't know. I don't exactly get why they don't get it. And I played Beautiful Soul. And she said, oh, well, the reason they don't applaud is because that's really not the appropriate response to that song. It's really a beautiful, beautiful song. And then she said, you know, there's a song that I have that I've actually had some similar experience with. And she played Waterfall. And I said, God, I just think that's an incredible song. You know, and I don't know what they're doing out there, but, you know, I think we should both keep these songs in because they're really beautiful.
Better than the pain that shows you want to transform.
Following Margie's comments, again from 1975, was a rare version of Margie, Chris, and Meg singing Margie's song, Beautiful Soul. I was recently very honored to get a chance to interview Margie Adam. She's just released her 8th album, called Avalon, on her own label, Pleiades Records. I figured that she was one of the best people to ask for her definition of women's music.
Women's music is as old as the lullaby, so let's just get that out on the table. And then there is this phenomenon or this movement called women's music, which kind of exists in a time period, kind of erupted on the scene, if you will, in the early 70s. This had to do with a bunch of us who looked around and did not see ourselves in the music industry, did not see women engineers, did not see women in distribution, did not see women in production, did not see women using drumsticks and playing the bass, did not see women anywhere in the music industry except fronting bands as singers. What we really did in the 70s was to create a total alternative universe where we could maintain control over the means of distribution, production, and also control over the music itself. So women's music was originally an impulse of many radical feminists to make music in our own image rather than through the male gaze. This was extremely revolutionary and made a lot of people very upset and nervous. And in fact, the fact that I continue to call my music women's music continues to make people nervous.
I next ask Margie how she would describe her musical style to someone who hasn't heard it.
I'm a singer-songwriter who's been as deeply influenced by Rachmaninoff and Ravel as I have been by Carole King and Burt Bacharach and Joni Mitchell and Laura Nero. So the music that I write has all those influences. As a singer-songwriter, there's a whole bunch of my material that I sing. As a solo pianist-composer, there's a whole bunch of my music that I play on solo piano. So Avalon is a mixture of those two impulses within me. And then, of course, you also have to sprinkle through all of this a deep influence that comes to me and comes through me as a result of being organized in the early 70s by the Women's Liberation Movement and by the lesbian feminist community in Los Angeles. So you got your politics, you got your consciousness, you got your solo piano, you got your jazz pop influences, your folk pop vocal singer-songwriter thing happening with some bit of a dash of scuba diving thrown in, some gardening, some Radles, femme, serious organizing, activist stuff with some deep connection to the earth and a sense of the immediacy of changing the world to make it a safe and precious place for everyone to live in. So all of that's going on in my music. And that's all going on Avalon as well.
Something unique about the album Avalon is that it contains a song not written by Margie Adam. It is Carole King's Will You Love Me Tomorrow. This is the first time Margie's recorded a song by someone else, and I ask her the reason behind it.
Of all my influences, Carole King is the most significant. And that's because her voice and her album, Tapestry, created a context for me as a young feminist lesbian songwriter to imagine myself not only writing music, but also singing it. It was because at the time she put out Tapestry, it was very, very unusual to hear a voice like hers on the radio. The kind of voice that she had was, and also the kind of voice that Joni Mitchell and Laura Nero had, for all three of those songwriters, their voices were considered non-commercial. And when they began to actually perform the music that they had been writing for other people for many years, they created a context for me to imagine myself performing my own music as well. And no one was more dramatic in that regard than Carole King. It's been quite a journey for me to come to a place where I claim the identity of singer, separate from singer-songwriter. And that's really what it took for me to record Carole King's song. The fact of the matter is, I recorded Will You Love Me Tomorrow because I could sing it finally and feel totally comfortable in the range that I had chosen to sing, and because I felt like I could bring something new to the song as a result of my own experience.
Tonight you're mine completely. You give your love so sweetly. Tonight the light of love is in your eyes. But will you love me tomorrow? This a lasting treasure, or just a moment's pleasure? Can I believe the magic in your eyes? Will you still love me tomorrow?
Just excellent. I also asked Margie if there was any special story she would like to share about a particular track on the new album.
I have to say the most spectacular moment in the recording was something quite unexpected. I had decided that Avalon was going to have only my voice, piano, bass, drums, and backup vocals. Mary Fettig, the tenor sax player, came in and said, "I have a tenor sax line for Avalon." And I said, no, I've got everything I need for that song. And Carrie Lobel, the executive producer of this beautiful album, said, "Marg, why don't you just let her lay down the tenor sax line? And if we decide not to use it, that's fine. If we decide we want to use it, we'll have it." Well, listen to the tenor sax line and what it does to Avalon.
Margie Adam treat. At the beginning of this segment, I played a little bit of the song Beautiful Soul with Margie, Mae Christian, and Chris Williamson singing. In 1974, Dusty Springfield recorded this song. It was for an album that was never released, that is, until this year. It's finally resurfaced on a new CD called Beautiful Soul, the ABC Dunhill Collection. Here's Dusty Springfield singing the song written by Margie Adam, Beautiful Soul.
I wonder what you're thinking.
I can't finish the feature on Margie Adam without mentioning that she was a pioneer in another musical genre. In 1980, she released the solo piano album Naked Keys. This was just before the New Age Windham Hill phenomenon, and Margie helped prove that a solo piano album could be a commercial success. Janis Hiatt has been quoted as saying, "If I could play the piano like Margie Adam, I wouldn't have to bother singing." I bought the Naked Keys album when it first came out, so I'm a longtime fan of her playing. In the background from that album is the song From the Beginning.
This is Margie Adam, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage on KPFT in Houston.
My next artist, very different from anyone I've ever interviewed. She's come from being a former stripper and adult film performer to her current status as an established and well-respected blues and jazz entertainer. Her name is Candy Kane, and she's recorded 5 albums since 1994, winning much critical acclaim. For example, the House of Blues label recently honored her by including her on their release, 30 Essential Women of the Blues, alongside artists like Bessie Smith and Etta James. I started out my interview by asking her name and the name of her new album.
My name's Candy Kane, and my new CD is called The Toughest Girl Alive. It's on the Rounder Bullseye Blues and Jazz label, and I'm really excited about it.
How would you describe your musical style to someone who's never heard it?
My style is sort of a mixture of old-timey blues and swing, but it's my own quirky brand of burlesque that makes it have its twisted element, and I think that that's what makes it sort of contemporary. I mean, I've heard people call my show like a revival meeting in the parking lot of an X-rated bookstore, and I think that's fairly accurate because, you know, the show kind of, I'm not that good at censoring myself, and so I just kind of talk about sexuality issues and body image issues and stuff like that, and not as radical as what you'd see in an X-rated bookstore, but probably as controversial.
Please tell us about the song, I'm the Toughest Girl Alive.
Well, I wrote I'm the Toughest Girl Alive just from a lifetime of adverse circumstances. I mean, I was a teenage welfare mom and a stripper and porn queen and a bisexual who had a big crush on my gym coach, who was a beautiful woman. I was always pretty outspoken about all of my beliefs, and so I've had a lot of obstacles thrown in front of me. And during my recent gnarly, horrifying divorce, I was really feeling sorry for myself, and I started having to think back on all the things I had been through, and how dare I feel sorry for myself when I'd been through all these things. And that's how I wrote I'm the Toughest Girl Alive. The only thing I regret about I'm the Toughest Girl Alive is that it's gender specific, because I really would like it to speak to all people, men and women. I think all of us need positive affirmation, and that a song like The Toughest Girl Alive could be so powerful if it weren't just a girl. So I encourage all the men to just be tough girls when they listen to the song, and it'll be fine.
Candy Kane had an album in 1997 called Diva La Grande, and from it, I asked her about the song, I'm in Love with a Girl.
I'm in Love with a Girl I wrote after I went to Copenhagen. I saw a girl there at the bar. She was this really beautiful blonde, and I kept asking her her name, and she said, oh, you couldn't pronounce it. You know, she kept telling me, you would not be able to pronounce it. And I'm like, yes, I would. Try me. Finally, she said her name, and it was something like, arse, arse. And I thought, well, maybe she has a frog in her throat, or she's coughing. I mean, I didn't know what to think, but that was her name, and so it inspired the song.
I'm in love with a girl, I can't pronounce her name. I'm in love with a girl, I can't pronounce her name. I just can't say it, but I love her just the same. Stammer, stutter, get tongue-tied. When I kiss her, I lose my mind. I'm in love with a girl. I'm in love with a girl. I'm in love with a girl.
that's her name. At night I call her baby, by day it's sweetie pie. She's so cute, my juicy fruit, she's the apple of my eye. It's all the same, I guess I'm to blame. I'm in love with a girl, I can't pronounce her name.
That was Candy Kane singing I'm in Love with a Girl from her album Diva La Grande. For my closing song, I asked Candy to tell us about another track from her new album, I'm the Toughest Girl Alive. I asked her to tell us about the song, Hey Mister, She Was My Baby Last Night.
Well, actually, I wrote Hey Mister, it was more pointed towards the swing kids. I was playing a lot of shows for the swing explosion, you know, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and Brian Setzer Orchestra, and we're suddenly getting all kinds of, you know, press. There was a big swing explosion, and all these kids were coming out to the shows perfectly dressed in their 40s clothes and in their vintage cars, and they all looked just dressed to the nines. And I really loved that part of the whole swing scene, but some of them had, like, a really big attitude, particularly some of the guys, and the better dancers had an attitude about their dancing, like they were really great because they could dance so well. And so I wrote the song to poke fun at some of these straight boys, because their girlfriends are really the ones who looked great to me. And so that's why I wrote the song initially. But I think it's a favorite for people. I mean, I am bisexual, and I do talk about it openly in my shows and in my music. I'm not ashamed of my bisexuality. I think that it's a myth that bisexuals are just fence sitters waiting to go one way or the other. I think all mankind is basically, and womankind is basically bisexual, and that we just, you know, have to find the right person to bring out that part of us. And anyway, it's a fun song, and like I always say, you won't see Big Bad Voodoo Daddy or the Brian Setzer Orchestra doing those bisexual swing songs because they won't admit they're bisexual, but me, it opens up a wide range of opportunity.
Before I play that song, I want to thank you all for tuning into tonight's show, and I especially want to thank Suede, Margie Adam, and Candy Kane for the interviews. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please email me at qmheritage@aol.com. And check out my website, found, logically enough, at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Lesbian and Gay Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month. Now, as promised, here is Candy Kane with Hey Mister, She Was My Baby Last Night.
Hey Mister, you sure look cute. Greasy hair and that slick blue suit. The one I wanted by your side. She was my baby last night. Hey Mister, you sure can glide across that dance floor smooth and wide. There's some moves you haven't tried. She was my baby last night. You might as well set her free. Hey, mister,
lips and tents, and we both know she's heaven sent.